So yesterday we talked about principles and values.
You have to wind up.
And we're going to ask you keep your books closed, no peeking, and let's see which of the principles and values you remember. Who can tell me one of them? All right. Alignment with Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody else know another one? Don't have to be in order.
Affection.
Okay. Family, love, and affection. 11.
Respect.
5. Mutual respect and appreciation.
Spiritual growth and education.
Progress. Yes, spiritual growth and progress is number 2. So you two don't get any more chances. Everybody else has to. So commitment and dedication, number 6. Okay, come on, the rest of you. Yes, focus on children's welfare, 10. Yes, number 11, family love and affection. No peeking. We only have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 left. You got half of them done. Number 7. Open and honest communication. That was 5. We already got that one.
Balance.
12. Regulated balance and exemplary lifestyle. You can have another chance if you want, Hal. Personal and social responsibility. 8. Yes.
Spiritual
equality. 3. Okay, only 2 left. We don't want to be negative, and we don't want to be, you know, unrealistic. So we have to
positive
be positive and realistic vision. 4. Okay, one more. You do this with euros. I do it with Canadian dollars. Economic development and prosperity. Okay, you guys better study better for tomorrow. So I think there's a few people that weren't here yesterday. Yes, no, or everyone was here. Anybody new today? Okay, welcome. So maybe some of you can volunteer to tell our newcomers why we were stressing principles and values yesterday. So she's saying to get rid of negative impressions that we have on Grihastha Ashram, or how to apply the teachings to Grihastha Ashram. Need a new battery? It's working, okay. Any other thoughts on why we were stressing principles and values?
To debunk the false ideas about Grihastha Ashram.
Right, to debunk false ideas about Grihastha Ashram. And anything in a positive? That's to get rid of the negative. For Bogdan.
It's important to know the values, to know what the good marriage look like, and what we should like
strive for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To have common vision and goals.
Yeah, common vision and goals, to see where we want to go, to try to get to a good place in our relationships and in our Krishna consciousness, and not to be sidetracked and diverted to the wrong path by negative paradigms. You can have this if you want. I'll mess with that.
So in this section, we want to look at the roles of husband and wife and how we negotiate that. Oops. And some of the main principles and values we're looking at in this section is spiritual equality and material difference, and also a mutual respect and appreciation. And we want to look at negotiating these roles in positive, constructive ways, and also dealing with possible tensions that arise in terms of different cultural upbringings or different expectations we have about marriage, and also the importance of nurturing values that will help us to navigate these. So we'd like to explore something about cultural norms, and these are the different things that influence us in our lives. So a basic overview for all of us is going to be one of the primary cultural influences we have is Srila Prabhupada's teachings. And then below on the left, you see ISKCON, the institution. So ISKCON, the institution, is based upon Srila Prabhupada's teachings. At the same time, you see the arrows going both ways, and that indicates that ISKCON, the institution, is deriving its direction and purpose from Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Although we were describing yesterday also, sometimes even within the institution of ISKCON, there may be things, which some of which we discussed yesterday, which weren't necessarily in line with Srila Prabhupada's principles and values and vision of what healthy spiritual life is, and there was a need to understand those unhealthy things which may be present in ISKCON so they don't have a detrimental effect on us. On the other side, we have Vedic society from India over 5,000 years ago. So again, Srila Prabhupada's teachings are based upon the Vedas. At the same time, there are some things within the Vedas that are not so applicable in this present day and age. For example, Vanaprast described in the Bhagavatam, you would see the couple, they would wear dreadlocks, have matted hair, they wouldn't cut their fingernails, and they would wear the bark of trees. So I don't know how that would work in today's age. Just something that's not necessarily, you can transpose that kind of a thing into the context of today's reality. So there's many things in Vedic society that are in line with Srila Prabhupada's vision and the way he preached Krishna consciousness, and some things which are not applicable in this day and age. Then we have contemporary Western society, or in your case, European society, and also contemporary Indian society. There's things from those that we utilize and that are beneficial for Krishna consciousness and family life, and there's some influences that are also maybe detrimental that we want to filter out. I think we have the next slide. So here's a more elaborate understanding of what, say, maybe my cultural norms might look like. And so there's many influences. Prabhupada's practical example, Prabhupada's books, Vedic society, contemporary Indian society, contemporary Canadian society, contemporary U.S. society, Canadian politics, U.S. politics, Western media, my family upbringing, my extended family upbringing, world economy, social interactions with the world, workplace association, modern science, Western literature, peers in ISKCON, ISKCON, the institution. So if we were all to do a little exercise and make a little map like this, we could discover the many different influences that have created who we are as individuals and the kind of paradigms or vision we have of the world. And so many of those things are favorable, and some of those things are maybe not so favorable to Krishna consciousness and Grihastha family life. And it's actually helpful to see, to take an introspective look at how these influences are impacting us to see if we want to accept those influences. So in reality, we're all very complex beings. What to speak if you have two complex beings with different complex cultural influences coming together and trying to have a harmonious relationship. And that's only going to be possible with some mutual respect and appreciation, open and honest communication. It's going to require some work. So, an important thing to understand. Next slide. Unless you want to say something?
No, I just didn't know if you really want the slide.
Pardon?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Nothing's coming in.
Oh.
Okay. So, again, in essence, our primary relationships is with Srila Prabhupada rather than Vedic society. That's important to remember. Next. I don't know if you have to click twice. Is it coming in? And we cannot simply transpose practices from India 5,000 years ago to 21st century Western society. We need to ensure that our practices are both consistent with Srila Prabhupada's teachings and respectful of our individual differences. Next. And here is a very important point, how Srila Prabhupada himself demonstrated flexibility, such as allowing women to live in an ashram in our temples. In Vedic society, that's something unheard of. But Srila Prabhupada was very practical, very pragmatic. He came to North America, and Prabhupada actually said once, he said, these young women came forward, and they wanted to assist me in carrying Lord Chaitanya's mission forward. And Prabhupada said, how could I turn them away? So Prabhupada created this facility for unmarried women in our society, which is not something, quote, Vedic, unquote. So Prabhupada was very practical and pragmatic. Next. So a key element in negotiating our cultural norms in relationship with Prabhupada's teachings, this Gaudiya institution, trying to understand things like Varnashram and Vedic Dharma, is to negotiate and not stereotype. Because everyone is an individual, everyone is in a very individual situation, and to simply try to rubber stamp some solution is not necessarily going to work. You have to be very thoughtful in how you're going to apply the philosophy of Krishna consciousness to your life.
Next. And we see that...
Mic's too low. Microphone.
Yeah. And we see that Srila Prabhupada, he was expert... Oh, thanks. I was going to get rid of it. He was very expert in extracting from the Vedas the principles which are truly Vaishnava. And so you'll see that in Prabhupada's books, very often he would quote the Vedas. He is quoting specific Vedic understandings which are totally in line with Vaishnavism. Like, he's not particularly taking us towards, you know, demigod worship and step by step going through higher rungs of different types of karma to Gyan. He's taking us straight to pure devotional service. So we need to understand that the essence that Prabhupada is teaching us is to how to have Vaishnava interactions in our dealings. And it's not so much that we have to have some Vedic understanding of our relationships, but rather that it's applied with the Vaishnava understanding. And that's probably so expert that, as my husband was saying, he could allow women to live in ashrams because the principle is that everyone needs to become Krishna conscious. Mm-hmm. So we have that wonderful benefit of being able to understand Vedic literatures through the pure Vaishnavism of Srila Prabhupada's vision.
And also understanding Prabhupada's instructions in the proper context and how to practically apply them. And we were describing also how sometimes even there's things that are very difficult to understand or seemingly even contradictory in Srila Prabhupada's books. I was just recalling there was one thing that Prabhupada wrote once. He said, if someone passes stool once a day, he's a yogi. If he passes stool twice a day, he's a rogi. And three times a day, he's a bogey. So Prabhupada said that one time. And then Prabhupada found out that some devotees were artificially trying to pass stool only one time a day. Like trying to... So Prabhupada heard this and he laughed. And he said this is like... He told this story that there was a book business in India. And Prabhupada said, was describing, when you publish a book, first there's a press proof, which is like a mock-up of the book, of how the finished book is supposed to look. And so the publisher in this company, he gave the press proof to the production manager, and somehow in the press, on the press proof, on the cover, there was a squashed fly on the cover. And then sometimes later, Prabhupada was describing that the manager of this printing house, he hears all this commotion in the bathroom, in the water closet, all these noises and banging, and he goes to see, and the production man is in the washroom and making this noise, and the manager says, "Well, what are you doing? What's all this noise?" And so the man says, "Well, on the press proof, there was a squashed bug on the cover, so I'm trying to get enough squashed bugs. I'm trying to squash enough bugs to put on every single book." And Prabhupada said that was literally the mentality of trying to artificially follow something that Prabhupada had said like that. So Prabhupada said, sometimes you have no common sense. So in understanding Srila Prabhupada's books, we need to use our common sense and negotiate how to properly understand the things that Prabhupada said.
And apply the essence.
Yes, apply the essence, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We already asked this.
Yeah, yes, that.
Mm.
Okay, this is right.
Skip it.
It's your call.
Okay.
Important. Does anybody have any questions so far? Okay.
All right. Like, we can imagine if, a Japanese devotee marries a devotee from South India. You know, they're obviously going to have cultural differences. They might both be devotees. They might both be chanting Hare Krishna. They might, think that that we're in heaven now. We're both devotees, and everything's going to go very smoothly. Maybe until they go in the kitchen, right? So that's a more graphic example of cultural differences. But we all have so many differences just in the way we were raised. And we have those expectations sometimes that grihastha life is going to be just the way I'm envisioning it. And then we get in our relationships and we find that the other person has a little bit of a different vision. And so it takes a lot of negotiation. And if we want to just, read Bhagavatam and say, okay, the woman's supposed to be like that and the man's supposed to be like this, those are all, good hints. But when it comes down to the practical level, we're going to have to negotiate. And so we often have to counsel couples who are doing a lot of arguing over their differences. And they're coming to us for which one's right, which is the right way to do it. What we tell them is, one isn't necessarily right and one isn't necessarily wrong. They're just simply different. And you don't have to argue over who's right. You have to negotiate how you're going to live with your differences. So that's a big part of living together. And it's also a big part of negotiating your roles. Because we may have traditional stereotype roles about what the women are supposed to do and what the men are supposed to do. And then we come to our practical reality of some women don't know how to cook, or both people have to work, or so many variations on the theme. And so if we just pull out, Vedic roles, it may be pretty hard to, take that big leap from where we are today to some imagined role that we think we have to fit in. So, any questions on this? All right. So now we're going to try to understand this big divide, try to get a little closer here, Let me... for this exercise, we are going to put the men over on this bridge platform, and we're going to put the ladies here in this platform, and this pillar is the demilitarized zone, and we're going to ask you to do a couple of things. So, gentlemen, we would like you to make a list, a big long list, of all the wonderful strengths that us ladies bring to relationships. Okay? Got that? And then you prioritize your top three. And ladies, you're going to make a big long list of the strengths that men bring to your relationships. And then you're going to prioritize the top three. And then, gentlemen, now's your chance. You get to write a list of what you wished we understood about you. Okay? And ladies, you get to write your big long list of what you wished men understood about you. All right. So you can break into your, maybe make a little circles in your sides of the room. I'll see you later. Ladies, why don't you make two groups? It's going to be too hard to talk. Here. So prioritize your top three or six over there on that. So how are you doing? Need another minute or you're finished? 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 You're good? Just a minute, okay.
We untangle, that's good.
Communicate.
Spaghetti.
I don't like this one.
Sure. Are you gentlemen ready to go? Okay. All right.
Here we are.
Okay, everyone can stay where they are, but just turn around facing this way. So that's what men appreciate at work, correct? Okay. So we'll start with a gentleman. If you would like to give us the first item that you appreciate about what ladies bring to relationships.
Hare Krishna. So the first and very much important for us is that women makes a home, brings warmth to home, and brings children.
They bring
Women makes a home. It is from the proverb that a man can make a house, but woman can make a home. Yes.
So you're saying they make it feel like a home.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
So next,
we'll do one.
Okay.
We're doing the strengths, right?
Yes.
Okay. The first strength is responsibility.
Responsibility.
Yeah. We said protection.
Protection. So we got two. Yeah. Another one for the gentleman.
She makes him self-confident.
No, not maybe. This is we're appreciating.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Ashley Schiller Prabhupada, he said, every man, every great man, has a great woman behind him. And Prabhupada said, even Krishna gets energy from Radharani. Schiller Prabhupada said that. Maybe instead of whizzing around so much with Bhakti Mike, we'll give you one more.
One more. She gives him tenderness.
Tenderness. Yes.
I'll let you just so one or two?
Okay.
Stability.
So women appreciate we bring stability. Thank you.
We said rational intelligence.
Thank you. Nice to hear that. And the gentleman, can I have the mic? So we're up three, four. We'll do two from them in again.
She gives him a tolerance.
Their tolerance. You're saying they're tolerant towards us. They're patient with us. Is that what you're saying?
She brings tolerance in a relationship because if they are tolerant, men will become tolerant also.
Teach us tolerance.
Teach us, yes.
So you're saying their patience help us become more patient and tolerant.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll do one more for you. Sorry. I'm sorry. Okay.
So she.
He's trying to be diplomatic here.
No, we have got more items that we said under the that women makes him more self confident. So I don't want to repeat the thing because we said also a lot of things that can compassion.
Oh, we appreciate it. Compassion, yes.
Compassion, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So we think what is important is also safety that the man provides for the woman in a relationship.
Safety.
Yeah.
Oh, we said security.
Security. Okay. So we got six there. And if we have the mic back for the gentleman for the last one.
She brings him joyfulness.
Joyfulness. Thank you.
We have got.
Okay, now we're going to switch and ask what you gentlemen, what is one of the primary things you would like the ladies to know about men?
That we cannot multitask.
We know that. But you keep expecting it, and next time you keep expecting it.
That sometimes we just need to say something and we need them to listen to us without giving their own opinion about it. Yeah.
Does that include not giving solutions?
You need one, mostly we don't.
You don't, okay. Something.
I agree.
Ashton, mics there will do.
We have three mics now.
Oh, you two? Oh, awesome. Okay. Awesome.
Okay. We've got demilitarized over here.
So we'll take one more from the men's side.
No, the back group. There's two groups.
Okay.
We would like that men would understand our emotions and needs.
We should understand your emotional needs?
Yeah. Okay. Needs. Okay. Emotions and needs. Yeah.
Emotion and needs. Okay. Gentlemen.
That we need time for ourselves.
Alone time. Alone time? Yeah, they call it cave time in North America. And the ladies again.
We also need time for ourselves sometimes, and we are also sometimes very emotional, and we need them to understand that.
There's not two in there.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We can't multitask, so you've
got to
narrow it down.
Okay.
Yeah, but I can.
Your expectations aren't realistic.
Alone time. Alone time.
Okay. In the back.
We need men to spend time with us.
Okay, the quality time.
Yeah, quality.
We need to feel respected. Woman?
We need respect.
Respect, yes. Mm-hmm. And that we can not be her female friend, that she need to have some female friend. That we can.
So that that's two, okay.
That we cannot also
we cannot be the village.
We cannot be the village. Okay, we can't meet all of your needs.
Yes.
You see. Okay.
We cannot fulfill all our needs. Okay. We are not Krishna.
Okay. Okay. Ladies again.
We discussed this and we found out that once a month we get extra sensitive and extra emotional, and we really need support for those days.
So you're saying you need some assistance emotionally when you are emotionally challenged or hormonally challenged. Okay. Hormonally challenged. Okay.
Back. Okay, we need care, appreciation, and respect.
Okay. So there's a mutual need for both to be respected. Yeah. And gentlemen.
Well, this is quite that if we see a beautiful woman, some other woman, that that it is not troublesome, that she doesn't have to feel jealous, because if we can recognize beautiness. Mm. But this woman is our, and but we also have got eyes.
So you're saying if your eyes glance, it doesn't mean that you don't love your wife.
Yes, that is it. Okay. Yeah.
I'm not sure. Wait.
And then you get one more home. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Men have one more.
Okay. The women have 6 or 8?
Yes.
Okay. You're up. There's a man here.
Okay. The men actually have one more.
One more. So, because we spend a lot of time for the previous, we had only 5 hours. Say.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I said. Our silence doesn't mean that there is anything wrong in a relationship.
Mm. So men are saying if we're silent, we still love you.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting. So we've probably done this in maybe 16 different countries, and same kind of themes actually come up all over. Same types of appreciations and same types of little differences between men and women and what they expect the other to know and understand about them. It's very, very similar. And in marriage, it's very important for couples to understand these differences and learn to respect and honor them. A difference you could compare to a wedge. When we were driving into Slovenia, I could see lots of wood piles. And I'm sure those logs, they split with a wedge, probably hydraulic now, right? Saranagadi, I finally bought a hydraulic log splitter, but I used to cut all my wood by hand with the wedge. So if you have a wedge and a big block of wood, you put the wedge in the block and you keep tapping, and eventually a big block of wood will split in half. And it's very similar if you have these differences in your natures and your needs, and if you don't understand them and honor them, what happens? That difference can become like a wedge. And every time you bump into that difference, it can be like banging it with a hammer. And if you continually pound on that wedge, eventually a big block can split. And a similar thing can happen in marriage, that if you don't understand the dynamics of these differences and how to negotiate them, navigate them, it can become like a wedge in your relationship, which unfortunately sometimes manifests as separation or divorce. So we don't want to go there. We want to try how to resolve this mission impossible. So one almost always thing that comes up that women are actually really appreciative that men have rational intelligence. Right? That makes us feel really good. We wanted respect and appreciation. Thank you. But at the same time, the women wanted, they wanted sometimes for us just to listen with no solutions. So that's a bit of a contradiction there.
Which one do you want?
So why is there this difference that they appreciate you're rational, but sometimes they don't appreciate that we're rational? And women tend to be much more emotive than men. And women have a very strong need for empathy and understanding. Whereas men, that's not such a primary need. Although spiritually, we all need that. We were discussing that on a walk today, how, you know, we need to have close relationships and understand each other. But for men, it's not such a pressing need. So the dynamic that often happens in marriage, probably 99% of the times in all marriages, that the wife, she needs this emotional support and need. So she'll approach her husband with something that... You want to give me an example?
Use your other one.
Okay. Well, let's say she was working in the store where she worked, and there was some problem with the other devotee that was working there and created some tension, and I could hear her say that, and in my mind I'm thinking, okay, I can solve this. I know how to solve this. I can fix this for her. And I'll say something like, don't worry about it. I can, you know, phone up so-and-so Dasi tomorrow, and I can tell her, you know, that she needs to actually listen to you and do this, this, and this. But in actuality, she wasn't looking for a solution. She was just looking for me to say, well, if I heard you right, it must have been a very challenging day for you. Yesterday must have been very frustrating and probably not very productive, and you're probably kind of disturbed by it. And maybe she just wanted a little pat on the shoulder. And sometimes that's all ladies want. Did I get that right? Heads are nodding. Sometimes all they want is a little empathy. But we're so logical, we're always trying to find a solution. But to complicate the dynamic more, we, out of love, you wanted protection and security and safety. We love you guys, and we're thinking, our offering of love is we're trying to solve your problem. And then you're thinking, there's no problem, I just want you to listen to me, right? And so you get frustrated, and then you kind of furrow your eyebrows and glare at them, right? And then men think, well, what's going on? I'm solving the problem, and she's getting frustrated and angry. And then men tend to back off because they think this is not working. And therefore, that's why sometimes men want this cave time. We want a retreat. But because that's such a strong need for women to have that emotional connection, they'll come and try again to get some empathy, to get some understanding, and we try again to give a solution. They get more frustrated, and men get more bewildered and withdraw more. And then eventually the woman becomes angry and says, you never talk to me. And the man's thinking, every time I do, it's a disaster. And if...
There's too many heads bobbing over there.
And if that's unresolved, it actually can literally destroy marriages. So both sides have to understand the other. That men, sometimes we just need to know that women, all they need is just for us to say, well, I'm guessing you're feeling, even if you don't have a clue what they're feeling. just say, take a wild shot. And say, I'm guessing maybe that you're feeling, take a guess. And if you don't get it right, she'll say no or not exactly, and she'll tell you a little more. And then you can say, well, I will tell me more, and then eventually she'll get it down and get understood. And just by doing that, you'll become like the knight in shining armor for her. You didn't have to slay the dragon. You didn't have to fix anything. all I had to do was say, you know, that must have been hard for you. You must have been feeling this. Sometimes that's all we want. And so that's an important thing for men to understand. And as men, we're not so emotional. And as you were saying, like we can't fulfill all your needs. And what was it that you need a village, right?
We're not the village.
We're not the village. But unfortunately, in the day and age we live in now, although we grow up in villages, we don't really have a village atmosphere where everyone's really close and you're close to your grandmother and aunts and uncles and mother and father and all your cousins. And we tend to have very nuclear families. So that means that sometimes men need to take more of that role to give that emotional support to women. So although it may be foreign to us, we are very logical, right? We're logical. I appreciate that we're logical. We know how to fix things. So that's something we can be logical also and learn how to do for them, the little simple offering that we can just make some attempt to understand their feelings.
And ladies, if they're having a hard time, just say, can you give me 5 minutes? I just need you to listen. Just tell them what you need. They'll be so glad 5 minutes. Otherwise, they think it's going to be an hour and a half. They'll be happy to give you 5 minutes.
And also, as ladies, important for you to understand that sometimes men in their lives are working or service in the temple, might be under a lot of pressure, and maybe they come home, they come to associate with you, and if you just go and say, we have to talk right now, this might not be the right time. It might not be the right time. Because sometimes men do need to unwind and relax. And like Utsama is saying, if you can say, is there some time when we can sit down and talk? And maybe if your husband wants some downtime or some cave time, maybe you could just sit down quietly with him and respect and honor that. So if you kind of both learn to understand each other's needs and honor them, you're differences, instead of becoming an impediment to your relationship, a challenge to your relationship, they become something that actually strengthens your relationship. So again, in the bigger picture, your differences actually strengthen the bonds of your marriage because you learn to respect and honor them. And there's actually a significant amount of research that shows that happily married couples can have up to 69% of their challenges. There's no black and white solution. So how can they be happy if nothing's getting solved? But what the couples do is they just learn to understand each other, respect the differences, and find ways to constructively negotiate it. So many of these different things that come up in a relationship, sometimes we just expect our spouse to automatically understand, but we don't automatically know. So therefore, it's very important to develop some skills to have open dialogues, to understand each other and to communicate openly and honestly about what you need in the relationship and how you can help each other meet their reasonable needs. So it's very important. And later we're going to do a whole section on communication to find ways to actually understand. Like sometimes we have a dialogue in our head when the other person's talking to us. And that's not really communication. We want to listen and understand.
So what we're going to do now is give you a 10-minute break. And when we come back, we're going to ask if you have any questions on other challenges you see between men and women differences. So you can think about that while you're taking your break.
Want to come in again. When we reassemble, if you're here with your spouse, you can sit with your spouse or fiancé. Maybe I can also say something about the dynamic of isolation and inadequacy. So again, if you're coming in now, you can sit with your spouse or fiancé.
So we can start with taking questions that you may have on any challenges that you've seen between men and women in relationships. Okay, you're all so well adjusted here. Okay.
Say a comment that women don't need just words what men want to say, but to show love, you like through actions, to do something for the women, like.
So people experience love in different ways. And researchers have come up with 5 different languages of showing affection in relationships. And one of them is that words of appreciation. That may be stronger in some people than in others. The second one is acts of service, that you do something for me and that shows you that you love me. Bring me breakfast. Another one would be doing shared activities. You do things together. That makes you feel very close. Another one might be a gift. Oh, they remembered me and brought me a little gift, right? So that might be another way in which we exchange or feel love. And another way is some people just really need that little bit of, you know, physical affection. Oh, how are you? And, you know, the hug. And so it will be different for different people. The tendency is that the one that you like, sometimes that's the one in which you give. So maybe I really need words of appreciation. And my husband's love language is acts of service. So he might be, you know, helping with the dishes and working really hard and all these things and not really saying anything to me. And I'm thinking, oh, there's just like no love in this relationship. And he's like doing all these things and he's thinking he's being very loving.
It's not uncommon to have situations where the husband's working very hard for his family, he's paying all the bills, providing for everything, and that's his way to express love for the family is through this acts of service. And then as Uttama is saying, sometimes the wives might have this need for words of appreciation, and it's almost something foreign to the man. And it's almost like there's this joke that the man says, well, I told you I loved you the day we got married. If anything changes, I'll let you know. It doesn't work. Sometimes men, they're doing all these things that are loving, but they haven't really addressed the way the spouse needs to receive love. And all of a sudden, a man gets served with divorce papers and he's completely blindsided. So, again, one of these principles is open and honest communication. What do you need in your relationship to feel loved and protected? And you need to talk about that. And sometimes as Vaishnavas, we think, well, you know, pure devotee, we're trying to become a pure devotee. We should not have any needs. We shouldn't have any needs or express our needs. But no, you have to express your needs. Just like Kardama Muni, he performed austerities for, 100 celestial years. Lord Narayan appeared before him, offered him a benediction. He could have asked for anything. And he said, my dear Lord, I need a wife of like disposition.
Now, what would your brahmachari leader 15 years ago reply to that one?
Probably, you're a Maya, Prabhu. But it's described in the Bhagavatam, literally almost, that Krishna said to Kardama Muni, yes, I'm aware. And coincidentally, Swayambhuva Manu is coming here in a few days with his daughter who has a crush on you.
Srila Prabhupada, he comments in the purport that Kardama Muni knew what he needed to make spiritual advancement. And so he requested the Lord to help him. He knew that he wasn't yet ready just to say, take me back to Godhead. He knew that what purification he needed. And so he asked the Lord for help. And we have to be introspective in the same way. And we practice bhakti yoga, But we very often think we married a mystic yogi, and they read our minds and know everything we need. But part of relationships is I need to communicate my needs and expectations. He needs to communicate his needs and expectations, and we need to help each other fulfill those. And we need to make it easy for the other person to help us with ours, not just complain and make it difficult. So that's really what commitment is, that we're there to help the other person and help them to understand us and help them to get what they need. So if you want to
understand... Can I just say something more? Sometimes we may not know what we need. And at those times, it's very helpful to have a dialogue. Like one of the Matajis was saying that sometimes women, when they're hormonally challenged, they need some extra support.
He used to say to me, "What do you need?" "I don't know."
You don't know.
So I finally just started asking, "Well, if you knew, what do you think it would be?"
Gets you thinking.
It gets them thinking. It's actually a good question to ask sometimes if you're talking with someone and they can't quite figure something out. Ask them if they did know, what do you think? It actually works.
Or take a few wild guesses or whatever. They just because your brain's kind of shut down because you're stressed, you know.
I did that technique with one of my clients, and I said, "But if you did know, what would that be?" And she said, "If I did know, I would tell you."
So you have to find what works. I was just going to comment that if you want to discover your love language, you just go on 5lovelanguages.com. It's going to pop up, and then there'll be a questionnaire. And it'll be 5 minutes, and I'm sure you can do a Google Translate into, you know, if you need it in Slovenian. And usually you will come with two that you really like. But the way you know which one is your essential love language is that if it's not present in the relationship, I'm just can't handle it. Because we all like all of them.
Mm-hmm. As a footnote, sometimes we encounter individuals who say, "Well, this isn't Vedic. Why are you using stuff from modern psychology and science?" But actually, Srila Prabhupada said in the Bhagavatam that he said all fields of knowledge, such as science and psychology and chemistry, he said they should all be used in the service of Krishna, and they become devotional service. And in one place he actually said they become none different than kirtan. So there's many tools we can utilize to help us come to more Vaishnava standards of relationships. I mean, and basically, the essence is of what we're trying to do is just get husband and wife to treat each other with respect like Vaishnavas, if we were to boil down to an essence. And it's something such a simple thing, but sometimes it takes a lot of introspection and thought and breaking old habits and patterns to try to learn how to practice that kind of behavior.
Yes.
Can I maybe just ask one practical question? I'm very glad that you said this now. Really, thank you so much. Do you maybe have an experience how to... Because many people still think that, like you said, we are Vaishnavas, we should avoid like sociology, all this stuff, but it's really so helpful. Mm-hmm. How to change the perspective, how to make some changes into this direction, maybe just practical, if you have some experience.
And like in Vaishnava culture, you live in community. And your aunts and your mothers, they're actually teaching you all these things in subtle ways. We're just wording them in a different way so that you can visualize them. Because it's hard to visualize all the subtle nuances in Vedic culture that we don't see that are behind all the actions that are talked about. So it's just, you know, tools to get to those Vaishnava places.
And from one perspective, too, if I broke my leg and I told you I'm just going to read Bhagavad Gita, it'll fix everything. wouldn't work. Srila Prabhupada, he criticized us on many occasions that he said, you have no common sense. You need to use common sense. And Prabhupada was so pragmatic in seeing how to apply things in Krishna service. So we want to apply things in Krishna service. We don't want those things to move us away from Krishna, but if they can assist us in our service to Krishna and improving our consciousness and our relationships, then we should take advantage of those things.
You had a question? Or you were just holding the mic? Oh.
I would like to ask about cultural differences. I think it's very, very important to clarify it. Not just if couples are coming from a different culture, maybe they can be from the same culture, but when we are becoming devotees, so that's different. So we can have a different understanding of Vaishnava culture and how to handle it properly. It's really a lot of misunderstanding and also issues in regarding that. So can you give us some example and clarify some things regarding whatever? Thank you.
I think it boils down to mutual respect and appreciation, open and honest communication, and also trying to be aligned with Prabhupada. And as a couple, we may have different understandings of Srila Prabhupada's teachings and how to apply them. We'll talk about that maybe a bit more when we talk to... What are you looking at me like? We should talk about this later or talk about it now?
It's okay.
What's okay?
I don't like that. We'll talk about it later because maybe we'll forget.
Okay. A very important way to resolve these kind of perplexities is by communication and by understanding each other. And like I might have some completely different opinion about something in devotional service from anyone here in this room. And generally sometimes we have dialogues about those kind of differences, and you're telling me what you think and feel and believe about that. And in my consciousness, I'm just thinking about how I'm going to reply to and defeat what you just said and get my point of view heard. So that's not really communication. If I'm not actually listening. I'm not 100% listening. Real listening means, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes, is something called empathic listening, which is what Rupa Goswami recommends, to reveal your mind and confidence and hear and confidence. So if I can understand how you feel, even though I totally disagree with how you feel, if I can let you know through my words how what you said is understandable to me. So in general, what that would look like. You tell me what your experience, what you're thinking, feeling, and I just reflect that back in my own words. And you say, yes, you got that right, even though I don't agree. And part of the challenge there is that sometimes we have a fear that if I listen to you, I'm going to lose my point of view. But trust me, you don't lose your point of view. You can understand someone you disagree with and not lose your point of view. So I understand your point of view, and similarly, you try to understand my point of view, although you totally disagree with me. And according to Srila Rupa Goswami, that's a loving exchange in devotional service. So we disagree, but we're engaging in a form of loving devotional service, discussing something that's very different in both our visions. And there's a mystic dynamic there, which is the fact that that's devotional service, which means Krishna is pleased, he's present. And as we say, the ocean of material existence shrinks to the amount of water in the hoofprint of a calf when you engage in devotional service. So when couples talk about these kind of things, when they're allowing themselves to be vulnerable enough to actually express what they're feeling about that, share that, be understood, and not be judged. And when that happens both ways, this dynamic happens that either the problem becomes very easy to solve or very easy to manage, or it completely disappears. And that can be what happens a lot in marriage, is because a lot of the tensions in marriage are caused by the fact that sometimes we feel unheard and unloved. But understanding someone is a loving exchange. even though I can totally disagree with her in something and still love her, and she can totally disagree with me and still love me. So I think the key is this mutual understanding and respect, and that helps to create a platform where either the problem's manageable or it disappears or there's a solution, one of the three.
So you are asking for an example, and it could be on almost anything. Could even be about dress. Maybe, you know, you're more comfortable going to university if you're wearing a skirt or some pants. And maybe your husband thinks, no, we should preach in every opportunity and you should be going to university wearing your sari. And you should keep your head covered, you know. So you could have quite a difference on that. And you could even both be coming from, you know, the same neighborhood in, you know, Slovenia. But you may have a different, you know, idea of how we should be preaching our philosophy or anything like that. It could be how you cook or how you place things in the house or so many things you could be having differences. Did you want to give us an example? You're laughing.
I mean, one example I think is sometimes if the husband came from a home where the mother looked after all the household duties and the father was working, he might have that expectation coming into marriage. And the wife might have had a situation where both her mother and father kind of shared the household responsibility. So that they could have a mismatched expectation of how they're going to manage their household responsibilities. So that's going to require some serious dialogue. And again, in those kind of situations, they have to see what's going to work for the marriage.
And if you need your husband to help with the household chores, you have to be patient that he might not know how to do them, so you might have to teach him. And then you have to be happy with how he does them. Not always complain that it's not your way. At the same time, you should try to do the way we like it, so ask. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, we had a similar situation. We were talking with a couple, and the young man, he was a single child, so his parents kind of pampered him, and his grandparents pampered him, and his wife's saying, well, both of us were more or less spoiled. And I said, well, probably it was more than less. And so it was kind of an adjustment for him to, and he was trying. He was sincerely trying to meet that expectation.
Anyway, any other questions? Okay.
I'll just maybe address one thing in relationship to some of the items we brought up. One was how the women, they want this feeling of protection and security, as opposed to the men wanting respect and this kind of isolation time. And those two differences can kind of trigger some primary fears in both men and women. Generally for women, their greatest fear is the fear of isolation. Like you see small girls, they have some little argument and in the playground, and one little girl says to the others, I'm never going to play with you again. And the girl's crying. But if two boys say that, the boy's like, I don't care.
Or Sati was so upset that they weren't going to the sacrifice of Daksha, right?
Yeah. So the fear of isolation is very painful for women. So when men tend to withdraw without their wives understanding why they're withdrawing or why they need this quiet time, they tend to feel isolated. And men have this need for respect. And when that kind of dynamic happens, it's called pursuit withdrawal. The woman needs that emotional connection, so she starts telling the husband, you never talk to me. And when we as men hear that kind of thing, it kind of makes us feel like failures because we're trying our best to please you. And we're seeing that it makes you unhappy. It tends to make men feel inadequate. And that's a big fear for men. And that's why men tend to withdraw more and more, because it's very, very painful. So some men will tend to withdraw more and more, and some men will actually become angry because that inadequacy triggers a different kind of response in them. So understanding that we both have these triggers, that men have to understand that how for women to feel isolated, it's very painful. And women have to understand, for men, if they feel inadequate, they feel very painful. So for women, it's very important that don't criticize your husband. Just ask what you need for in a nice, respectful way. One couple we talked with, they were having great difficulty, and she said, "My husband never talked to me." And I said, "How long are you married?" She says, 15 years. And I said, "Wow, 15 years. Never talked to you once." She said, "Not exactly." And so I just said to her, what I'm kind of reading between the lines is that your husband, when he does talk to you, it means so much to you that when it's absent, it's extremely painful. And she said, "Yeah." And so I said, "Well, why don't you tell him how much it means to you when he does talk to you? Just change the dynamic. Instead of complaining, make a request based on how that behavior adds value to your life." And that actually changed the whole dynamics of the relationship, that they started to respect each other like that and request what they needed in constructive, compassionate ways.
Because otherwise we're triggering that feeling of inadequacy, and so it doesn't get a proper response. So the thing to understand is, when I'm feeling isolated, it's very painful. In a close attached relationship, when you're feeling pain, the other person's also in pain. Maybe he's not feeling pain because he's feeling isolated. He's feeling pain because he doesn't think he's up to the mark, and he's feeling some low self-esteem or some inadequacy. But the feeling of pain is the same. So as Vaishnavas, we need to reach out and see, how can I help the pain of the other person? And either one can do it for the other. And it just takes a little endeavor to take it, you know, up a notch or two. You know, it just like if a kid's really, really crying, if you just make them feel a little bit better, then that's one step and they can gradually get themselves out of it. So we just need to take little steps to help the pain of the other person. Even though we might have differences, we still are people who are feeling pain. And so it doesn't matter who takes the first step in anything, because we all want good relationships. Often ladies say, "Well, I have to do all the work in the relationship." I say, "Well, you're the one who wants the good relationship, so do some work. It doesn't really matter." So the point is to be compassionate for the pain of the other person. And showing compassion is way more important than just that flowery word we call love. Because if we're not compassionate, we just say we have feelings of love for the other person, it's not really being demonstrated. And without that compassionate behavior towards the other person, we're not going to feel that the other person's there for us. And so we won't develop trust. So if there isn't trust in relationships, we just don't feel at all satisfied. So we need to build that trust by small, compassionate actions very often.
So when we feel some disconnect because of a collision in these differences and expectations, it's just a signal that if we're not feeling loved, we need to become more loving. We need to do more loving actions. There's a very nice lecture Srila Prabhupada was giving once, and he was explaining why do we love this body? And Prabhupada said, we love the body because of the presence of the soul. And he said, no one cares for a dead body, but we care for this body because the soul is present. And he said, we care for the soul because the soul is connected with Krishna. And he said, similarly, we care for others because of the presence of the soul. And it was interesting, then Prabhupada, he went on that, he said, in this way the love goes to Krishna. That if we, as Vaishnavas, treat each other with respect and love and compassion and care, that's actually very pleasing to Krishna. So Prabhupada is indicating that love goes to Krishna. And then the next thing he said was very interesting. He said, but the interruption, he said, is illusion or maya. So sometimes we feel these disconnects in our relationship, and that's actually maya coming in. It's illusion is coming in, just creating this separateness between us. And it's like Maya's plan is divide and conquer. So when we do feel those kind of divisions, it's a signal that we need to do something to reconnect and find ways and means to work on our relationships. And that's why we're saying in the beginning that the real fairy tale marriage is you get married and you do the hard work of living happily ever after. So you have to have this work at communicating and understanding, and it doesn't happen overnight. You have to practice at it. So would someone like to read this quote? Does anyone, whoever has bought the mic?
Okay. Who? I guess I can read it. To be either a woman or a man only involves one's bodily dress. The soul in nature is actually the marginal energy of the Supreme Lord.
So we're all spirit souls. We have these differences, and in life we learn how to resolve those differences, work with them, make them a strength instead of a liability. So we go to Krishna.
Yeah, I'll flip in. I was thinking I was starting with the pony, but you're starting with the marriage map.
Okay.
So
you gotta find that, yeah.
I'll find it.
And it might be quicker to exit that and do the, rather than scroll through the whole thing. We're just going to find one slide here. I'll just going to do it quick. Oh. Back. So here's a little snapshot of marriage. And as we were talking, it begins with everything's perfect, we're in heaven. I don't want to reduce marriage to a chemical phenomena, but when you fall in love, your body is producing different hormones like dopamine and oxytocin, and it's called dopamine for a reason. It's called the feel-good hormone. So you tend to be flooded with these hormones, and in that stage of marriage, everything is perfect. You only see all the things you have in common. Nothing, there's no such thing as differences. Life is just beautiful. But eventually that phase passes, and that is 100% normal. And you come to this stage where you start to notice differences, and you think, like, maybe some aliens abducted my spouse and left someone else here. And then the next stage is both husband and wife start to think that everything will be perfect if the other person changes. And they're trying to change each other. But again, we're all very unique individual spirit souls, just with these amazing, beautiful qualities. And at the same time, sometimes we have these different unusual characteristics or qualities. And so some of those characteristics and qualities, some of them we can change or modify, but some of them are very integral to who we are as spirit souls, and they cannot be changed. So sometimes couples will just end up butting their heads trying to change each other on things that can't change. And that's kind of a critical point in marriage. And at that point, you can go one of two ways. If you have no commitment and no skills, then you might spiral downward towards separation or divorce. If you have commitment and no skills, then you might stay together, but maybe not so happily ever after. But what we really need to do as couples is to take shelter of our commitment and get the skills and support to develop the necessary tools and abilities to be able to work together, understand each other, communicate, cooperate, have compassion for each other, to actually learn to work as a team. And that actually is what love is. Like Prabhupada was describing sometimes in how in Vedic marriages that the husband and wife, they cannot even imagine separation. It doesn't even cross their mind. It's just, there is so much connection. So it's important to understand this middle stage. It is 100% normal. It's just growing pains. It's not that you married the wrong person. It's just a natural stage of marriage, and it takes a lot of work. And again, that was one of the negative paradigms that we brought up, was this idea of a fairy tale marriage. So we want to dispel that. If Some of you who are married are probably going through that stage, experiencing that. Some of you who are going to be married, it's healthy to know there will be challenges, and it's normal. It's normal. You just have to become equipped to handle those challenges.
It's really common that in the beginning of the relationships, you just see how much you're alike. How we're so similar and we'll be good together. And it takes a little while into the marriage till you start seeing all the differences, and then you just start to see only differences. But you need to see the balance.
So we're going to be looking at especially the qualities of mutual respect and appreciation and open and honest communication to help us navigate these kind of challenges in marriage.
So we were saying that, I know there's a more efficient way to do this, but anyway, sometimes we have...
Am I too tall here? Okay.
There's not much to see there. When we're having disagreements or things aren't going as well as they should, researchers have found that it's not so much whether couples argue. All couples argue. It's kind of how you bring up the stuff that you need to work through. What really matters is how effectively and how quickly you repair your negative interactions. So we're going to discuss a few repair attempts along with some other communication skills. So this one we've just called Finding the Pony. It's not like you have to find the Slovenian thing. It's just it's a Grihastha Vision Team made up name. And it's derived from a story. At Christmas time, it's kind of common that parents bribe their children into good behavior. You know, if you're good, then maybe for Christmas time you'll get this big item, right? So it's Christmas morning, and these two brothers, they've been told that, you know, maybe they'll get a pony if they're really good. So they run downstairs, and there's the Christmas tree, and the younger one's really excited. I hope we got the pony. And underneath the tree is this little brown stuff at the bottom here. And he's thinking, oh, I guess we were bad, kind of like the coal in the stocking, you know. And so he's kind of going to go back to bed and forget this Christmas. And the older one goes, wait a minute. There's only one way that could get there. Let's look outside. And sure enough, outside was the pony. So very often in relationships, we present this lovely item here. We kind of dump on the other person. But really, we want a pony. So sometimes when we're in distress, it's really hard to know what our need is. And so the other person needs to take a wild guess and try to find your pony. So, for example, finding the pony means find the unmet need. Because when people's needs are not provided, then usually their behavior is negative. That's always the go-to with young kids. When the little kids are kind of crying or whiny or misbehaving, you know, see the mothers thinking, oh, they're hungry, they're tired, they're, you know, bored, they're, you know, so they're trying to find the unmet need and either give them the food or the coloring book or the whatever, right? So it's the same thing with adults. When we're behaving negatively, there's an unmet need. So say that my husband comes home from work and I just complain, oh, you're never home on time. So he could, you know, just do the isolation thing and withdraw in his cave and not talk to me. He could get mad back, you know, give all his long list of excuses on why he is late. Or he could find my pony.
So what do you think her need might be?
Attention.
Attention?
Mm-hmm. So what might you say?
something along the line, can you give me like 10 minutes and then I'll put my attention to you?
That could work, yeah. So you're never home on time. You know, it's kind of like, oh, you wish I would come home earlier so we could spend some quality time together, and give me 10 minutes and I'll be there for you, you know. So, you know, you got it. You just have to find what it is. And it's like, I'm going to deflate. You know, I'm not going to be so angry because they understood what it was. And that really is the reason I'm angry. I still remember that old Abhay Charan video series that Bhakti Chaitanya Bhakti Thiru Maharaj made. And Prabhupada was in a childhood, and there was all the riots happening, and his mother didn't know where he was, and they'd locked all the doors, and he comes knocking on the door, and his mother opens it up, and she sees him, and she slaps him in the face. Right? It's like, because she's like being so scared, she was like, it's not that she's mad at him, she's just so worried he wasn't home and he was dead, right? But it just came across, you know, completely wrong, that I'm just like, where were you? How come you weren't home? I've been so worried, right? So it's kind of like that, you know. It's like the gut reaction isn't always what we want to say, you know. She didn't mean to chastise him, she wanted to like love him and give him a hug, but she's just so scared, right? So we're not always able to say things in the best way. So we need the other person to find our pony. All right. So, say that I spent too much money this month and my husband's kind of upset. Maybe I need to find his pony. What's his pony, ladies?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, if I was to say, so I understand that you need, what would you need?
What I say to you?
Mm-hmm.
I understand that you have to be sure that you can provide for family, but you really need it to buy.
Well, then you're kind of making an excuse. You got half of it right. Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, oh, you'd appreciate it if we had a budget and I stuck to it, you know, like, because you want to, you know. So you want to, you know, like that. So,
What happens is that act of acknowledging the need is like a validation. And it's like for you as ladies, we're saying how that's a very powerful thing for you. And so even if men get a little escalated, if you can find their need, it also helps us to de-escalate. And it also shows that we care about the other person. We're turning toward the other person. And that's also an important aspect of love and affection. And it has a very healing effect, especially with small children. Sometimes our grandson used to always play with this one girl at the Sunday feast. And one Sunday, our daughter was struggling to get him into the car to take him home.
He was crying and throwing a fit.
I happened to walk by the car, and poor little Geary.
He's still in the car, crying.
Car with his seatbelts on. He's just like flailing his arms and red in the face. And so I just went to him. I said, hey, Geary. I said, you really like playing with this girl, Narangi, don't you? And he just went, yeah. And just the steam just kind of went out of him. So just sometimes having our need acknowledged, it touches the heart. It's a very healing thing. And also it puts us in a better position to negotiate whatever the tension was about, as opposed to just responding negatively back, to just throwing more of the stuff back and forth.
Yes.
I think the problem is
Hare Krishna.
I think the problem is more deep in this question. Because if man cannot maintain family, then he has got fear that he can lose his wife.
Lose his
wife.
Yeah.
Suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just by acknowledging that need, again, I'm trying to say that what it does, it creates a more conducive situation to negotiating the problem.
And to speak deeper about it. Like, yeah. As long as she starts to empathize why, maybe it's, you know, you want a budget, and you can go, yeah, and then you can explain the reason why you want the budget, you know. Mm-hmm. But it gets that initial anger diffused.
But also, if happens 1 month, next month, every month.
Oh, for sure. It's a bigger problem. Yeah.
That would be a big problem.
Yeah. Mm. Again, the sooner you negotiate things, the better, right? Before it carries on. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you could just be holding it out and saying, oh, thinking, I have to be a nice husband, but maybe it would be better if you brought it up sooner than later before the, you know, months go on. So, for sure. And these are just examples to, you know, get you to try it out. Okay, turn to somebody beside you, and that other person's let your teenager do something you don't approve of, and you're pretty angry. So,
the other person
has to find your pony. Give it a try, just turn to somebody beside you. She's coming right now.
Could you please a little explain more for the male single? We do not understand properly.
Your wife's really mad you let the teenager do something that she doesn't like.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now
oh, we did, okay. I just thought of it. Put my mind on it. Just some of those.
About the okay, so did you find the pony? What was the pony? Anybody find any ponies?
I mean,
one pony.
Okay, can I have your attention? Okay. So, can I have your attention? What were some ponies that you found? What were some ponies that you found?
Well, one might be that we didn't communicate with each other.
Oh, so you have need some agreed upon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's say I know this for a fact through various internet videos, movies, and whatnot. That the child usually goes to the mother. She says no, and then she goes to the mm-hmm. far, and then he goes to the far, and then usually he says yes, and then, okay, I go.
Mm-hmm. So they need to be on the same page.
Mm-hmm. I remember one of my granddaughters, she had these, I don't know, she made these two little fish, and she says, one's a no fish and one's a yes fish. I said, what do you mean? She says, well, this one's my mom, she always says no, and this one's my dad, he always says yes. So, and, yeah. If you're not on the same page, your kids are going to figure it out pretty fast, where to get what they need. So, all right, so ladies, gentlemen, you just brought a whole bunch of the Brahmachari friends home for dinner, and you forgot to tell your wife, and she's a little bit fuming in the background. So what's her pony? I mean, she's a Vedic wife and all that, and she appreciates guests, but what would she like? Yeah, a little warning, maybe. So, oh, you would have appreciated if I let you know a little earlier, right? And if I brought some maha home with me to help. Okay, so...
It can help to preface your statement with, I'm guessing that you're feeling this or experiencing this. Because then if you don't have it right, they'll say not exactly, or they'll tell you.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, guys, you're all upset because you came home and the kids have toys everywhere and the house is just all cluttered and you're all upset. What's his pony? Yeah, you know, he came home. What did he say? Bhakti Mike.
Oh, she's a mic, yeah.
Oh, sorry. She said Bhaktin Mike. We have our own. Bhaktin Mike. She's saying that when you come home, it's really nice if you have some order and organization because you've probably worked in chaos all day and it's nice to come home to some order. So you just appreciate an orderly environment.
Although if you have a couple kids, it might not happen. Our daughter and her husband were living with us while they were building their house, and they had one child, and 3 years later they had twins, which was exciting. Mm-hmm. And they were growing up while they're building the house, and then
we'd be both out working and we'd come home.
We'd come home and every single cushion in the house was all in the living room. All the coats are off the coat racks on the floor. And my grandson comes up with 6 pieces of Lego. He says, look, Grandpa, I made an airplane. And the other 994 pieces of Lego are like everywhere on the floor. So expect that if you're going to become a parent.
All right. So the point is that, you know, sometimes we are escalated, we are upset. And the way to de-escalate, help the other person de-escalate, is to try to find their need. Because it helps them to understand themselves, and it also helps them to understand that you care about what that need is, and you understand it. So this is just what we call a repair attempt. So we're going to go on to, to just some other communication skills. For some reason, that one's in the wrong place. I just want to show this definition. Sorry. I know there's better ways of doing this, but I like to push buttons. So we communicate in different ways. We communicate by our actions, by our words, by our tone of voice, and by our appearance. And so from that you can understand why simply internet text messages aren't that effective, because we're missing the other three. We don't understand the tone of voice, the facial expressions, and the action behind it. So, we do encourage personal communication, not just, text messaging each other all the time. And I'd like to just have someone read this definition of healthy communication. Any Bhaktin got the Bhaktin mic? Can you read the definition of healthy communication?
Definition, you said, right?
Yeah, just read it there.
Healthy communication occurs when two people are able to express their needs and wants to one another with care and respect, acknowledging the individuality and free choice of the partner.
So does anything pop out there to you of, what's important or different? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Free choice, very interesting, isn't it?
Respect.
Mm-hmm. Because communication is not a demand. It's a two-way definition. So.
And again, respect is important because I can respect that you have a different opinion from me. I can respect that. I might not agree, but I can respect that. And that creates a dialogue of communication that we can have a good friendship or marriage because I respect you even though we're completely different.
Mm. And if the other person can't do what we're asking, they can respectfully negotiate a different time or why they can't do it or help us understand or whatever. So, very important that this or all the aspects of healthy communication. I don't know where we are. So we know that there's listening skills, speaking skills, and negotiation. So we're just going to talk a little bit about reflective listening. And when we communicate with each other, we want to be very careful that we're not using these negative types of communication. Because if we're just simply instructing or threatening or saying, oh, yeah, well, I always do it, you know, your autobiography, giving advice, just preaching to the person, you know. Preaching in a, you know, like Prabhupada said, you know, like that kind of thing. interpreting what they do to mean whatever you think it means, evaluating, just being... we approve or we disapprove. You're just giving judgments, criticizing, insulting, ridiculing. They're going to undermine that healthy communication. So we want to be careful that we don't use these negative. All right, here's where we want to go. We're going to talk about.
Rupa Goswami's loving exchange of revealing your mind in confidence and hearing in confidence.
What, want to talk a bit about it? Or?
I don't know. I guess I'm okay.
Here's your mic, dear.
So we have some little visual tools you can use to help you conceptualize the process. One is a microphone and one's a mirror. So the person speaking obviously is holding the microphone. And there are some guidelines for how to speak effectively. And one is, when you feel a need to communicate, just make that request that, can we have some quality time? Just say, can you reflectively listen with me? And just make that clear that you actually want to be heard and understood. And when you're speaking, you want to speak for yourself. You don't want to mind read what the other person's thinking or possibly feeling. You want to say what you were experiencing and feeling in that situation about that specific issue. And it's very important in this process to keep your statements short. You want to say it in sound bites, because what's going to happen, the speaker is going to maybe say one or two sentences and then stop, and then the listener will actually, in their own words, say that back to you, and that will give you confirmation that you are understood. And if you go on too long, they might not be able to catch it all. So it's very important to break your what you're trying to say into manageable sound bites.
A little bit. I'm not entirely familiar with all their steps, but yeah. This is called so many things. Reflective listening, empathic listening, speaker-listener technique, maybe it's called that too.
And it's important you want to express what your feelings are in the situation. And that's important, especially in close relationships, in marriage. Because we both care about each other, and we both want each other to feel loved and protected. And if we express our feelings about the situation, if I understand that there's something that's bothering her, and I can understand how that affects her emotions and how she feels, and how she will feel loved if somehow that situation can be modified, I'm very likely to try to... after I understand that, to come to some solution to manage it, because we care about each other's feelings. So this, as opposed to if she just complains that something's not happened, why I don't do this, how do you respond to that? It's almost impossible. So this is an actual positive, constructive way to deal with any kind of conversation, what to speak of, challenges, even conflict. And so if you have the mic, you would speak what you want to say until you feel the other person has fully understood what you're trying to communicate, or they can't hear anymore at that point, and they could request you to stop for some time. And then you would take turns back and forth expressing your views on the issue.
Okay. So if I'm the listener, I don't get to respond. I need to focus on what the listener is saying. I don't get to say, oh yeah, I think that too, and then I'm starting my own conversation, right? On my thoughts. We're just focusing on what they're saying, and we're trying to paraphrase what they say. Oh, I'm hearing that you're saying, or I understand. And at the end, we want to clarify it by, did I get that right? So it's actually really hard to be a listener. But Krishna gave us two ears and one mouth because we're supposed to listen twice as much as we talk. And if we all listened a little bit deeper to what the other person was saying, we would have much closer relationships in our whole community. And at first it seems kind of like artificial. So if I'm understanding, you know, or whatever. Because we're unsure of ourselves, we don't know how to do it. But once you get good at it, you'll sort of get your own flavor to it. It doesn't have to be exactly with these words. You will find yourself using it in many, many occasions when your friend just kind of comes up and says something, you know, that they're experiencing difficulty, then you'll automatically switch into just listening. Because right now we're thinking, oh, I wonder if I have a solution for that. What am I going to say? I don't know if I can help the person. They don't really care about that. They just want you to understand. Because after food and water, feeling understood is the most important need for human beings. And we stay in communities when we feel understood. So it's a really important skill. I used to be in sales, and I worked selling health supplements. So if the customer comes in and they're starting to ask for this and that, I ask them many questions. So if I'm understanding, it's, you know, you need this because, no, not like that. I need it because of, it's something totally different than what I thought they said in the first place. And sometimes they're not even sure how to explain it. So it's even a good sales technique that you give the person exactly what they need. So you can use it everywhere. It's not just used for conflict. It's the listening and understanding to another, and listening and understanding another person helps us to develop those closer relationships and connections and to really understand each other.
And if we have aspirations in our life or challenges and we're trying to process those things and understand them, if we have someone we can reveal our mind to in confidence, it's almost the dynamic that takes place. It's like I am expressing my heart to you, and when you reflect that back to me in your own words, it's just as though I'm seeing a reflection of myself in your heart. And it actually enables me to see myself more clearly. And so it has a very powerful dynamic. And generally, when you go to counselors, that is what they're doing. They're helping you explore the depths of your heart by reflecting back. And also, as Uttama is saying, that's a very important thing in communities, that sometimes devotees feel isolated or literally don't feel like they're a part of community because we don't actually communicate very much. We, as Vaishnavas, we accept prasadam and give prasadam. That's three times a day at least. Giving gifts a little bit. Are we revealing our minds and hearts in confidence? I don't think we do that enough in our society.
And partly we don't reveal enough, but also partly we don't use enough confidence. Mm-hmm. So when you're using this technique, or at any time anybody says anything to you, it's in confidence. And you don't have a right to share it with anyone else without their permission. And if we keep that in mind, then I think we will develop good relationships because we'll be able to, you know, understand each other. And did you have a question? Free choice.
Yes, free choice. Communication is a free choice. So in that regard, how we can respect someone who actually, when there is some conflict situation and some other part, it's not have enough strength or have some, I don't know, have some other things in mind like priority and cannot communicate in that situation. So how we can have a confidence in the other side who cannot communicate at the moment when other side request.
That's why, first of all, you have to ask, is this a good time to talk with you? You have to ask if they're available to talk and if they'd like to.
Because actually that was my situation. Somebody did something and I really didn't have because of my other things and the person didn't understand at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we
actually, what this free choice
is very important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the person didn't understand my choice to, you know, give my time to something really else.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
So we have to understand it both ways. Yes. And not take it personally. So let's give this a try.
I was just going to say one thing. Just even in terms of community, a small thing you can do in terms of this Guhya Makati Prichiti is, you know, generally we come up to each other and we say, how are you? And usually the answer is okay or fine. And that's the exchange. But I know some time ago I thought, okay, I want to make this a little more meaningful. So now when I ask people, how do you feel? You know, how are you doing? And they say, okay, I'll say, well, what does that look like? What does that look like? What do you and I had this one experience. Just I think it was last Rath Yatra. There was one lady we know. Her husband had died about 2 years before, and so I went up to her at the Rath Yatra and I said, "How are you doing?" And she said, "Okay." And I said, "Well, what does okay look like?" And she said, "Oh, my brother just died." So I said, "Well, that must be really difficult for you." And just kind of took it just a little more meaningful depth. So we can do that in our friendships. Just ask your friend how they're doing and say, well, what does that look like? How are you doing? Check in with each other.
Mm-hmm. So,
I don't have a thought. Let me get volunteer to talk about some challenge you might have had.
Okay, let's just try it.
Okay.
Can I share something with you?
Okay.
For sure?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm okay right now. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
You know, when we travel, I kind of feel like all the little details I have to take care of, and then I kind of get worried when I miss one, and then you're kind of grumbling that I missed it, and I kind of, you know, makes it a little hard for me.
Okay, so you're saying that you're experiencing that you do a lot of the footwork in arranging all the different things for traveling, and sometimes you worry that maybe something gets missed or doesn't turn out, and you're feeling that I'm getting frustrated with you. Did I get that right?
Yeah. And I guess I'm also a little overwhelmed sometimes that I can't do it all. And I'm just maybe, I don't know, feeling a little lost, like I'm going to forget things.
So you're saying you tend to feel like it's all on you, and again, you kind of worry that you're going to miss something.
Yeah, so I'm happy to do most of it, but I do miss a lot of things, so I'm trying to figure out how we could negotiate, or, you know, I guess I just want you to feel comfortable to check with me that I remembered things. I don't even remind if you say, hey, did you remember this?
So you're,
it helps me.
You're saying that you'd like to try and just figure something out to make it work a little smoother. Is that right?
Yes, and I also, I don't mind if you remind me or ask me if something happens, because sometimes I've totally forgotten about it.
Okay, so you're saying you don't mind if I get on your case a little bit right now?
As long as you do it nicely.
Can I say something?
Sure.
Okay, so we switch. Sometimes when you're working and making plans, sometimes I can't tell if you're talking to yourself or if you're asking me for help. Do you know what I mean?
So when I'm over there mumbling, you don't know if I need if I need your help or if I'm just talking to myself.
Right, right.
And you feel a little confused. Or maybe you even feel like I'm grumbling about you.
No, it's confusing because I don't know. I'm not sure what you want. I can't tell. It's confusing for me because I can't tell if you're asking for help.
Hmm. So you get confused. You don't know what I need.
Yeah.
Occasionally you can ask a question. So what would help you?
If you told me what you needed.
Yeah, but I don't know.
if you didn't know, what do you think it would be?
Anyway, whatever. So that's the way in which you kind of, you know, work out things. So we're going to have a volunteer couple. We're going to use a couple just because, you know, whatever. Come up here and give it a try on... we'll give you a topic when you get here.
Volunteer or voluntold.
Are you volunteering? They volunteered? No. You want to volunteer? All right.
It's easier to move this.
Okay. Okay. Did you have any cultural differences when you got married?
None. We're not married yet. We're engaged.
Do you have any cultural differences?
Same country, so not really.
But not subtle things on how you practice Krishna consciousness or anything? No. Do you have any... What are you different on?
Where are differences?
You have differences? Yeah.
Hard to say right now.
Okay. Oh, you're still in the honeymoon stage. Everything's the same. They only see their similarities. Okay. Oh, boy, you're a tough couple. You're too perfect. Do you have any problem to talk about? Okay. So that's a problem.
Yeah, if you put us on the spot like that.
I know. I should have had something better. I thought you might have a cultural difference, so that's what I thought to bring it up from before. So then, tell him about some difficulty you're having with anything. We don't have any difficulties.
We usually talk to them out, so...
Yeah, so let's just talk one out. You have one? Not between the two of you, just with anything in life.
Some challenge in your life. Stress.
Okay. I feel like that sometimes when I tell you to clean the kitchen up, you don't really do it the way I like it. And that bothers me.
So you're saying I should listen on how you clean the kitchen more and then do it the way you like.
If you want to try to identify your feelings also. Mm. So what, express back what she was feeling in your own words.
So you're feeling like I am not listening to you. I'm disregarding how I should clean the kitchen.
Yeah, I feel like you're completely ignoring me in the way when I tell you how I would like it to be cleaned. So I feel like you're not acknowledging my ways at all. First you say yes, and then you just don't do it anymore after first two tries.
Okay, so you're saying I should be more consistent with the way I decide to clean, no?
How's she feeling? She's feeling what? Such an I? Ignored?
Oh yeah, so you're feeling ignored that I don't follow your instructions for how to clean the kitchen.
Okay, maybe it's just not instructions, but it's just you're not putting anything into the argument and the trying to get a consensus as well. You're not saying anything, so it just all depends on me. And then I have to say everything, and then you don't follow it anyway, but you didn't put anything into the conversation.
So you feel like I'm ignoring the entire conversation and just doing what you want because you say so, and not because I want to have a conversation on how to clean the kitchen.
I think that's the thing, yeah.
So switch. Now, you speak from your side on how you perceive that. Hmm. It's probably not your intention.
Well, usually when...
happened to her, though.
Yeah, I'm kind of used to, like, if someone says do something, I just do it, and then I don't really have any ways of, let's say, talking or, let's say, come to a compromise or a discussion of on how should it be done, as long as it is done.
So you feel like you don't really care about the thing being done as long as it's done?
Yeah, I would say that as long as it's done, does it really matter when or how it's done, as long as by the end of the day, let's say, it's done.
So now this is really hard for her to just reflect, because she really wants to say something, but she's going to have to only reflect.
So if I just tell you what to do and you do it, then you'll be fine with that.
Yeah, if I have, let's say, an ideal instruction on how you want me to do it, that would be very nice for me, yes.
So you need a more specific instruction?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Oh, here, you take this one. There we go. This is quite the... All right.
So this is probably in marriage one of those kind of problems that there's no real black and white solution, but you just manage the difference. Mm-hmm. Again, it's by ongoing dialogue.
But at least you had the dialogue, and so she can feel a little more happier with, telling him what she needs, and that he doesn't mind to just do it. If she asks him, she says, hopefully. All right. So find a partner and figure out something to talk about. If you want to talk about your cultural, any cultural differences, or if you're not married, why don't you talk about a difference in a partner that would be really hard for you? Like, you don't have anything in common. So say you don't have a husband, and you can tell her what would be really difficult for you if you had a husband with some negative trait that you just couldn't handle. So just explain to her what types of negative traits would be hard for you to handle,
and
vice versa.
Married or engaged couples you want to talk about?
And if you're married or engaged, you can, negotiate some cultural difference or manage your logistical difference or anything like that, or any current small difficulty you're having. So just find a partner, and we can give you, a few of you, some cards. So go ahead and switch. Maybe just make sure to give the other person a chance to be the speaker also. So remember not to say too much at once so the other person can remember. So change places if you haven't yet. Let the other person try the other. Do you need more time, or you're kind of finished, or who needs more time? So can I have your attention for a minute here? Did you get a chance to try both parts? What was difficult about it? Was it easy for you? Yes, it's so hard to not give your opinion, isn't it? The hardest part is the listener part. Yes, not to give solutions. Yeah.
So now you know what the men are experiencing when.
Anything else difficult or what was helpful?
To be really attentive.
Mm-hmm. So you found focusing helped you to be able to reflect better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how was the experience for the person who was speaking? How did you feel when the other person was hearing you and understanding?
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. A smiling couple. The perfection of our course giving. What were you going to say?
Very good, because you see what how did the other person understand this, and you can clear this misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm. Right, the misunderstanding in yourself or with the other person.
The other person about what you're telling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because we think we're communicating so clearly. And we actually have no idea always what the other person's hearing. We'll talk a little bit later how sometimes our intent isn't equal to how it's received. So by feeding back, we understand, you know. Because, sometimes I'll say to my husband, oh, after work, can you stop by and, get some bread and some cauliflower? And he'll go, yeah. And then he comes home with, some broccoli, and he forgets the bread because he didn't really hear. So, but he thought he heard because he's just thinking about something else, and he knows I wanted something. And, so we don't always hear everything correctly. So it reinforces that we do hear properly. And so sometimes we can go on and on.
That's a problem. I'm always forgetting. So there was this Homer Simpson cartoon. And she says to Homer in the cartoon, can you bring some milk and bread? He comes home with a llama and a boomerang.
A boomerang, those Australian.
And then she never wanted to write me a list. So she said, can you get, A, B, and C? And I'd say,
just make a list.
Oh, if I hear you right, you want a llama and a boomerang.
Yeah.
And she'll say, okay, I'll make a list.
So it's very interesting how people receive what we're saying, and we think we're being understood and we're not. So it's really beneficial from so many angles, from the listeners, from the speakers, from so many nuances. And it's a little hard at first, because we always want to give our opinion, and it's hard to remember what they're saying. And it seems really foreign and kind of feminine and needy. But if it's any solace to you gentlemen, we have had some men in our seminars that just had a really kind of hard time with it. And we had one where the husband didn't even want to like come to that kind of stuff, but he stopped by the door and my husband was saying something that was interesting, so he listened. And then he was going to go out and he was building something outside. He went out. And then he came back and he just couldn't kind of go away. It was kind of interesting to him, even though he thought he had no interest in kind of communication. Then I ran into his wife like 6 years later. I ran into her at the ILS last year. And she says, "You can't believe the difference in my husband." He said, "After that seminar, I just kind of went home and I learned how to just kind of like listen." And he brought out all this stuff that he was like feeling like he wasn't good at this and he was inadequate. And he kind of like was able to explain all kinds of things that about himself that he was feeling. And you should see him now. He's just like so happy in his service. He's doing all these things and he's off doing this. And he says, just by being able to get this stuff out that he had inside with somebody who, you know, he loved, he says he's a totally different person now. So we might think we don't need this stuff. Mm-hmm. But usually we have these things that we need to process. And it's not so easy. But just by somebody listening and reflecting back, we can process it in ourselves. It's not like we need someone else to tell us what to do. We can actually figure it out for ourselves when we're getting that empathetic hearing from the other person.
One of the cultural norms, especially men have been exposed to, is the cultural norm that men don't really have feelings, or they shouldn't have feelings, they shouldn't show emotion, boys don't cry, that kind of thing. And it's actually been attributed to a phenomenon now which is known as toxic masculinity, this kind of macho toughness image that men just bury all their emotions inside. And they actually found through research in Canada in the last 10 years, the male suicide rate went up 4 times, and the women's female rate remained the same. And they attributed to that fact that men tend to bury their emotions, bury what they feel, they don't go to doctors, and therefore men tend to die at least 6 years earlier than women, because they don't notice obvious symptoms in their body because they're just burying all their feelings. And then also they have major challenges and they have no way to process those feelings, anxieties, worries, cares. And it just builds up in them so much that some men end up just committing suicide because they can't deal with the emotions. So it's something we all have to look at, is how important this is this need to, that everyone should have someone in their life that they can reveal their mind and heart to. And especially as Vaishnavas, we're all trying to develop ecstatic love of Krishna. And like we see in the pastimes of Krishna, how Mother Yasoda, just seeing a stick, a walking stick of Krishna, she would have some ecstatic emotion. And the cowherd boys too, when Krishna was gone, they would see things that would remind them of Krishna and evoke these amazing ecstatic emotions. So if we have a culture where we're continually burying our emotions and feelings, is that going to help us someday to feel emotions for Krishna? Probably not. Probably not. So in our personal relationships, it's very important that we find at least one or two friends that we can actually communicate with, reveal our minds in confidence, process our hopes and aspirations and fears. And we've been discussing with some devotees the last few days how sometimes there isn't this sense of community. People in the community don't feel connected. And we experience that wherever we go. Sometimes devotees, they don't feel connected, although they're living in a community, because we don't open up to others and reveal our minds. And as Uttama is also saying, it's one problem we have in communities is that sometimes someone reveals their mind in confidence and it's not kept in confidence. And then that makes it very difficult for that person whose confidence was breached to ever express their emotions to anyone else again, because it's such a violation. Like one of my god brothers, he expressed something to a senior devotee, and he went to Prashadam the next morning, and everyone's talking about him. And you think he's ever going to tell anyone anything again? It's like you're shattered when someone reveals something accomplished. So it's a very important thing that Rupa Goswami said, to hear and listen in confidence. It's very important and a very crucial Vaishnava exchange. So it's something we should learn and practice.
And we also don't have to think of emotions as just touchy-feely things that people just act on the emotional platform. They're just like that little red light on your gas gauge when it says, hey, it's time to fill up. Emotion just helps you see, oh, something's wrong underneath. And what is that thing that's wrong, and what can I do to fix it? It helps you to know what to do. You don't have to act on the emotion. It just is a signal for you to look a little bit deeper and see what your real need is. And then you can be proactive and do something about it.
And discussing those types of things with a close friend or your spouse can help you identify that feeling and emotion and have the ability to give it a name. And by actually being able to have a name for that emotion and more or less kind of just hold on to it for a minute, enables you to deal with it. Because sometimes we're influenced by all these different emotions and we don't really even know what it is. We tend to be anxiety, distress, disturbed, frustrated.
And so we just shut off.
Yeah, we just shut off and we kind of live in this with this cloud going on in the back of our consciousness that is not productive. So being able to process it through that kind of meaningful association enables you to actually take ownership of that feeling and see how you're going to process it and what you can do with it.
So we're going to give you a 10-minute break here. We'll see you back at 6:15.
Thank you. So if we can have your attention.
Are you going to do this? Are you starting?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to explore another repair attempt. Previously we talked about this finding the pony, acknowledging the need of your fiancé or spouse or friend when they're expressing some escalated emotion. And we're going to look at another one, which is called turning a complaint into a request. And in essence, in terms of Vaishnavism, what we're looking at is how to take our actions from the modes of passion, ignorance, to goodness and pure goodness, which is what we want to do. We want to act and behave on the platform of pure devotional service, where all talking is singing, all walking is dancing. And so one way we can improve the dynamics of our relationships, remove them from the lower modes to a more mode of goodness, and hopefully the mode of pure goodness, is to make a request instead of a complaint. Do you want to say something on that? I'm going to do the skit.
It's, you know, we ladies, we're pretty good at complaining. When we don't get what we need, we just kind of complain. It's very hard for another person to respond to a complaint, right? You never put your laundry in the hamper. What's he supposed to say? I mean, sure, yeah, he should go get it and do it, but it's just, you're kind of putting down their character. Or, you never talk to me. It's like it's hard to answer those things. Yes, he can find the pony, but the other side is we have to take responsibility to speak properly. And when we do make a request instead of a complaint, it's much easier for the other person to respond. And if they can't do it, they can negotiate something else or a different time. So it's a much more effective way of getting what we need.
If you complain, you're very likely to get a defensive response. And if you complain with an edge in your voice of frustration or anger, you're very likely to get a response which also has an edge in the voice of frustration and anger back and tends to become very unproductive. So
And also complaining can come in different ways. I was just realizing, as my husband was saying, when I'm in the corner grumbling about something on the computer and I'm trying to figure out something, he doesn't know if I need help or if I'm asking him something or I'm just grumbling. So I guess that's kind of the way my dysfunction. Because I remember one day we need to go somewhere and I was cooking dinner for the family and I was really in a hurry and I was like stressed about many things and I thought if I ask the kids and they say no, I'm just going to like hit the roof, so I'm just going to do this myself, you know? And so I was doing it, but I was kind of upset and I was like banging the pot and shutting the door hard. And my daughter was in the living room and she says, Mata, if you need some help, you could ask. So there's different ways to make your complaints, right? They can be verbal, they can be action, they can be body language, things like that.
And she found the pony, although you weren't even...
Right.
You were jumping in a nonverbal way.
Right. So she found my pony.
So we're going to illustrate...
Turning a complaint into a request.
Turning a complaint into a request in a maybe a hypothetical situation. Okay, so here we go. I've absolutely had it. There's an infestation of post-it notes that you leave all over the house. They're on the kitchen counter, on the kitchen cupboards. They're on my desk, on your desk. They're on the computer. You even have a post-it note app inside the computer. They're actually everywhere. It's driving me absolutely crazy. Can you just stop it? That's a complaint. And so she's either going to withdraw or just complain back about something that I do. This is what I was expecting. So a more positive way would be to turn a complaint into a request. Do you want to amalgamate this with XYZ? Mm. Yeah, let's do that.
Next one?
Yep. So a very positive way to explain a complaint is to do it in this formula. When you do X in situation Y, I feel Z, XYZ. And what that does, I'm not placing any blame. I'm not judging or blaming. I'm just expressing that in this situation, when you do this, I feel whatever. And it makes it a lot easier to respond to. So that previous dialogue, we could change that into something, a request with something a little more positive, an XYZ statement. So I could just come up and I could say, Yutima, you know, when you leave post-it notes all over the house, I feel really frustrated.
Because you don't know what you're supposed to do with them?
Partially. But I also find it really frustrating. Maybe not frustrating, but I find it out of character for you because you keep the house like really neat and tidy. It's like everything is really, really sattvic. But these post-it notes are just completely out of character, which is...
So it makes you feel like it's cluttered.
Yeah.
So I could probably try and get rid of the ones that I've already dealt with.
That would help. Because I see them and, I mean, you even leave them on my computer. And I don't know if they're old or new.
Or for you or for me.
Right.
So we kind of got into reflective listening there, but it was much easier to get into a constructive conversation because he didn't just complain. He made a request. So requests could be anything from, you know, dinner's always late. That's a complaint.
Yeah.
Or I could say, if you could have, I have a meeting tonight, so if we could have dinner by 6 o'clock, that would really help. It's just a whole different way of saying it than saying dinner's always late. Or, you know, you never put your laundry away. I could just say, would you mind picking up your laundry because some guests are coming over.
Yeah, so those kind of statements.
Totally different way of saying
like
something.
Like here, the other statements are destructive. There's a character assassination. It's like something catastrophic has happened. And you tend to blame, which is very counterproductive. Whereas if you express a request in a positive, constructive way, you're much more likely to either get what you want or create a dialogue in order to resolve it.
Okay. So make a complaint to the Prabhu beside you. You never return my tools. Make it up. Not something real.
Hypothetical.
This is what my boss always say to me.
Okay.
You are always late.
Okay, boss, can you make that as a request?
I'm never late.
No, you're the boss. Make a request to him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So make a request.
Make him a request to correct the situation. How can you turn that around? Instead of complaining, you're always late.
Please try to come earlier tomorrow.
Yeah.
I will try.
Yeah. It's just much easier to do, right?
It actually works.
Yeah.
And a little added thing you can do is make that request and say how it's going to add value to your life or to the situation involved. Like I could say, could you please come on time because it would really help our organization because there's other people that depend on you and they end up waiting for you and then it's very unproductive. So it makes it a little deeper.
Yeah, could you please come on time so John doesn't have to wait for you or something to start the whatever. All right. Turn to a person beside you and make a complaint, and then say it again as a request. Okay. Okay. Can I have your attention, please?
You never stop talking.
If I could have your attention, I would feel like you valued my instructions. All right, so when the person complained to you, how did it feel?
Bad.
Bad, yeah. Yes? Yeah, you feel like you're attacked.
Yeah, so you're likely to respond back.
Yeah, you either respond back or you do nothing, right? So how did it feel when they requested, made a request? Yeah, much nicer, like it's doable, right.
Mm-hmm. In long-term committed relationships, we all have, as we were saying, we have these different expectations and needs which we need to negotiate and have dialogue about. Openly and honestly, and in that dialogue it's very helpful to make requests and make requests in a way that express how the fulfillment of that need adds value to your life or makes you feel loved and appreciated. And when your significant other meets those needs for you, it's also very helpful to express appreciation for that, And again, because when you complain, you're very likely to get less of what you want. And when you appreciate, you're very likely to get more of what you wanted. And sometimes, not just sometimes, but a lot of times, change is very gradual. But if you, with each other, in terms of talking about your different needs and trying to meet each other's needs, you need to have an ongoing dialogue and make ongoing requests. Don't be afraid to request something more than once or twice or 10 times, and also reinforce when it is met that how valuable it is to you. Because that's then we have this loving exchange that she makes some request and says what that means to her. I can identify with that. Actually, we used to have this issue about the household garbage. It was a small thing, but like when I grew up, it was me, my mom, my dad, my sister. One of us would take the garbage out. It was no big deal. But all of a sudden, somewhere in our relationship, I noticed the garbage was sitting on the edge of the kitchen counter on the floor. And, you know, so I would take it out because I was used to that as a kid. But because of my cultural norm, I saw everyone doing it. After a while, I was thinking, well, why doesn't she do it? So sometimes I would just leave it there. And at a certain point, I was seeing that.
It's still there.
And she was getting a little frustrated, angry, and that just didn't make any sense to me. And so I was just ignoring it. And then one day she said to me, she said, you know, she said, I used to see my father taking out the garbage. And I saw that as like an offering of affection to my mother. And she said, when you take out the garbage, it means as much to me as when you built a house. So I thought, wow, if I can get that result, make her that happy by just taking out the garbage, no problem. But it had some little hidden meaning that I didn't understand or know. So when you have these kind of dialogues, it brings things up, and that's something that maybe just could have been ignored and like swept under the carpet, and it would have got 10 times worse and could have caused so many tensions and problems. But just a small thing. And actually in marriage, sometimes it's actually those small things, small exchanges, that is what makes a marriage successful.
Himangi was asking for an example of a cultural norm. And that's one of them, because I used to see my mother, she always put it on the steps to go outside. And my dad, on his way to work, he would take it out. And I just thought he was like happy to do that for her. So I just had this expectation that you put the garbage there and the husband takes it out. It's just like normal. I mean, it's a no-brainer. But we had a different, you know, expectation on that. So, does anybody have any questions on any of this?
Anything we talked about today?
Okay, such a fast group. You get everything fast. All right. We are going to talk about communication filters tomorrow. Yep. And we are going to end with this poem, because I know you want to have a kirtan. You can have a question. All right. See, there's nothing like saying we're going to end to get the questions. He has the Bakhtin mic. We have two of them up here somewhere.
So what to do with our expectations, because our expectations are unrealistic. So how to be realistic in expectations, because we have expectations, or how to deal with this?
Well, if you negotiate honestly and openly, you'll discover what things are realistic and not for each other. And sometimes those kind of unrealistic expectations can turn into confrontations or arguments. And we'll discuss that tomorrow, a little bit about conflict resolution, how to resolve things in a constructive way. So if you do find some expectations in a couple that are very mismatched and they're arguing over this, there's constructive ways to deal with it.
Like, if I have some expectation that my husband is going to make the bed and put the pillows in the pillowcase, I'm going to have to wait another 40 years. He just doesn't know how to get a pillow in the case. I don't know what's so hard about it, but it's just an unrealistic expectation. So I know that. I don't expect that, you know, I'm going to get, you know, the bed made from scratch, because he can't do anything with cloth. But if he has some expectation that I'm going to, like, you know, think about changing the oil in the car, that's also kind of unrealistic also. So we kind of learn after a while
negotiate.
What's an unrealistic expectation.
We find what works. Like, I'll help with the laundry. I'll put the wash in, and I'll take it out. But if there's saris, and if she's going to wear them in public, she'll hang them up, because I just can't do that.
It's going to be so rumply that I won't be able to wear it. But I just know he just can't do cloth, right? So it's, I don't expect it, right? So you get to learn what's realistic and what isn't after a while.
Learn what you can change and what you can't, and you'll learn the wisdom to know the difference between the two.
So before marriage, we have over 100 questions on our website, Vaishnav Family Resources, and it's under premarital. And there you will see questions to discuss before marriage. Because if you have this expectation that I'm going to have 5 kids, and you haven't, you know, explained that to your husband, and he doesn't want any kids, that's going to be unrealistic that you're going to be able to negotiate that if he's dead set against having kids. So we have to see also that we do express our, you know, expectations before marriage also, so that we understand if they are realistic for the other person. You know, you might want to live in a mansion and he might want to, you know, live right beside the temple, you know. So, you know, you got to see if, you know, the person who goes on Sangirtan every day can build you a mansion. Maybe not, you know. Unrealistic expectation. And you may be a brahmachari and you may expect that the woman is just going to be happy, you know, living in some little thing right next door, but that may be unrealistic also. Right? So we have to check out our expectations. All right. Because we're in this together. So we
especially
are going
in your
to
book in the
or
last
you can read it off the screen.
If you can read
it,
yeah.
Yeah. So let's read this all together. We're in this together through good times and stormy weather. We're willing to do the work it takes, be a team, pray, make less mistakes. We want to get better together. With faith in Krishna that our marriage will be great, we're learning to better communicate, to speak what we want with respect, to listen to get the most effect. We want to get better together. Our goal is to be each other's best friend, to have skills so our relationship won't have to end, tools to manage our time, children and money, to avoid the mess and go after the honey. We want to get better together. Trust, forgiveness, respect, yes! Lying, cheating, fighting, no! With consideration, cooperation, and devotion, we can flow. We want to get better together.
So thank you. See you tomorrow.
At what time? At 1:30. See you then. I have an expectation that we'll all be on time. Let's see if it's realistic or not. Hare Krishna.